You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. This podcast is about the impact of COVID-19 on packaging reduction. Now, have consumers become even more conscious of environmental concerns, having been locked in and watching their bins overflowing? Or is the opposite true? Has everything been put on hold because of consumers' fear of transmission of the virus on unpackaged food, for instance, the difference in the price of plastics? If so, has a lot of hard work been undone? Join us to discuss it are David Jones, CEO and founder, Just One Ocean.
Hello.
Susan Hansen, global strategist, food packaging and logistics, Rabobank.
Hello.
Simon Ellen, CEO, the Recycling Association.
Hi.
And Jeff Brighty, founder and MD, Environmental Sustainability Associates Limited.
Hello.
Now, to start off with, Simon, can you give us a bit of an overview of the state of the UK's packaging reduction drive? Where had we got to before COVID-19 hit us?
We've made tremendous progress, undoubtedly, over the last two or three years. I think the seminal moment was the Blue Planet 2 and the horrendous pictures that we saw of ocean plastics, and caused public outcry, and it brought the politicians to the table, and I think that's the important part of it. I think government recognised they had to do something about it, and they came to the table, and to be fair to government, and probably one of my jobs is actually to take on government and often criticise them and bring them to the table. But actually, I do think that the government understood it, that they understand it, and they brought together several initiatives which were gaining momentum. We've got all within the context of the European Circular Economy Package, which the UK have now adopted, which is sort of groundbreaking legislation, really, on how we look at materials in a sustainable manner and their circularity and the benefits that it can bring, not just in terms of environment, but economics and everything else. And contained within that framework is the UK's environment bill, and very importantly embedded in there, the resources and waste strategy, which will bring groundbreaking legislation and investment into how we perceive, handle and look at waste and circularity going forward.
Can you put a date? What sort of year do you think was the real sea change? When did things really start to take effect?
My job for the last decade really has been to look at the sustainability of our industry per se going forward. And I represent the major recyclers in the UK. And I think one of the seminal moments in all of this dates back to actually 2014, when China, which was the main export route for the UK's plastics and paper, gave notice that they were looking at the way, looking at the types of materials that they were getting and looking at putting controls into place. And that was the real wake-up call, I think, for the UK to say we can no longer continue to just indiscriminately dump materials, recycled or otherwise, into other countries, and it's their problem. And I think that was the start of it. And then 3 years later, we got the Blue Planet scenes, and that really then sort of started the momentum of to get to where we are now.
Okay, well, I think that's a really, really good starting point overview. Obviously compressed into 3 minutes. That's beautifully done, Simon. Now, Susan, certainly here in the UK, lockdown began in March 2020. Since then, has has lockdown led to a substantial increase in plastic packaging and the way that it's dealt with?
Well, I can speak about it from an international perspective, not just the UK. But what we've seen is indeed that during the lockdown, we have seen an increase in the use of plastic packaging, especially flexible plastics. But mainly to wrap fruit and vegetables and bread again, products that many supermarkets, not only in the UK, but across Europe, have said they wanted to unwrap to have what we call plastic-free aisles. But during the crisis, I think a lot of consumers and a lot of brand owners, but also a lot of supermarkets were concerned about sanitation, about safety, about hygiene, about contamination. So actually, we do know that many companies in the fruit and vegetable and bread chain, they were asked again by supermarkets to wrap their products in plastics again. So that was definitely an increase, not with all supermarkets, but many supermarkets across Europe. On the other hand, we did see...
And actually, just as you're talking about that, is that in response to consumer demand, or is that retailers themselves wanting to put extra controls on?
I think that's a very good question, and I don't think you have one answer to that. I think it's a combination. I think if you are a retailer and you are getting concerned about how people, if you've seen all those social media films about people, filming other people touching the vegetables and picking out strawberries, etc., and that's something that people really like are scared about. They think they will get contamination. So I think it's probably a bit of a push and pull. I think both the supermarkets were thinking, what can we do to keep, in their view, keep infections down, from at least infections from food, touching food, and consumers also demanding this because they were concerned when they saw these social media films about people really putting their hands in between all the vegetables and bread. I think it's a bit of both.
And is it across the board, the addition of extra packaging?
Well, as I mentioned, you specifically see it in the fresh produce department and bread. But if you look at, for example, technical packaging, I mean, the whole automotive industry and a lot of industries in general have simply have less production, which means that in those areas, we've seen much less packaging. In the automotive sector, for example, in France, there are examples of plastic packaging companies with revenue drops of 80 to 90 to even 100%. So it's not across the board. It's really specifically related to food and beverage packaging, and as well pharma and medical. Mm. So it's very different depending on the segment.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Jeff, do you think that a lot of progress was being made, certainly in terms of legislation and consumers actually buying into this? Do you think that progress has come screeching to a halt, or are we actually, have we hit reverse?
There's a very good example, I think, around this about the behaviours, and when you saw people returning to the beaches in the spring when lockdown was lifted here in the UK, you just saw this catastrophic mess that was then left on the coastlines for others to pick up. For I'm sure there are many reasons why that might be, but I mean, a lot of that was plastic material that had been left. So I think people had gone to the view that there were other priorities for them, and that their behaviours, therefore, it was legitimate to change perhaps something that they were already aware of or conscious of, but thinking, well, the rules are changing now because we've got to protect ourselves against this thing called COVID. So I agree. I think there was fantastic progress, and we were beginning to see this now. We've already mentioned the Environment Bill and the measures that fall underneath that, things like the UK Plastics Pact through RAP. They're all working together from a business and industry point of view, and almost at a stroke, almost overnight, there was a significant sea change saying, well, we'll get back to that at some point, but at the moment we've got more pressing issues. For me, there was a one take home, I think, which was people now start to value plastic for what it can actually do? In other words, will this engender better behaviours for recycling, saying, let's make sure that we're now growing other plastic materials, so gloves, face masks, hand washing bottles, you name it, but actually can we make sure that those are going back into some sort of recycling process. So, you know, the early littering that we saw, when we just saw gloves all over the streets, and I think as PPE sort of awareness now means that, well, actually we still need to be wearing our face masks, but we can now not necessarily require ourselves to wear gloves. I think a lot of these were delivery drivers. I remember seeing gloves near large depots, for example. If there's anything that's going to happen, I think now is that there'll be hopefully a move away from the single-use disposable PPE, masks and the like, to go to more reusable ones. And again, that becomes a custom practice. But I think overall, we've definitely lost momentum, and the pollution risk has definitely changed from what would have been on the go food and drink to now the PPE. And the question is, when things settle down, if we go through a second wave, then we might get a resurgence of disposable masks being found on the streets more. But I'm just wondering now what the new normal will be and how we do actually begin to reclaim that momentum again.
Yeah. Okay, David. Now you're in the campaigning business in a way, and public engagement is a crucial aspect of this struggle to reduce packaging. Do you think that public perception of the importance of packaging reduction has been watered down by other concerns? And is that fair? You know, I mean, the PPE boom, the vast amount of simply of those nitrile gloves, that must be a disaster from your point of view.
I think it's had an impact in a couple of ways. I mean, first of all, it's reinforced how important plastic is as a material, particularly in the medical situation. And Jeff just sort of alluded to that. And so, which is good, because what we don't do as an organization is we don't bash plastics. The management of those plastic materials is the main issue. I mean, whether or not, is it a disaster? It's not the best thing in the world. I'd like to think that this is a hiccup. There have been some steps backwards. So, for example, in many places around the US, California, for example, they've actually rescinded on their plastic bag bans. Here in the UK, as you're well aware, they stopped the levy on plastic bags, although that is now, I understand, coming back in and will be increased, which is good. So there have been steps backwards, but I think if we can have a more integrated, strategic and holistic approach by government rather than just sort of knee-jerk reactions to a specific problem like straws or whatever, then we can bounce back again, if that makes sense.
So what would you like to see happening? So, I mean, there's an overall kind of resetting of society going on at the moment. What would you like to see happening as part of that in terms of packaging reduction?
Well, I do think the integrated approach is the most important thing. And what I mean by that is that we need to approach it from what I believe are six key areas. First of all is the science behind it, what we can do, how we recycle, all those sorts of things, how we manage those processes. That should drive the policy. We then need to educate at all levels. And we then also have to have innovation and alternatives. So people will want to take something out as long as there's something to replace it. I always refer to this. Years ago, I used to have a Filofax. When I lost it, it was like losing a leg. But then everybody said to me, well, actually, now you've got a phone. And when I lost my phone, it was a disaster. And then now all the stuff I have is not actually on the phone. It's in a place called the cloud, and I've totally lost it. So as long as we have an alternative, we can kind of – we are very good at adapting. But public engagement is essential. We have to bring people along with this. They have to be involved at the outset at every single level. And finally,
I've seen nothing in the press, and maybe I'm just blind, but I've seen nothing in the press to try and ameliorate the sort of acceleration of packaging and PPE disposal. Are there any campaigns to try and get people to deal with it a bit better?
Well, I think there is. I mean, the problem we've got now, of course, is that one of these steps back has been the impact on the recycling industry, and I'm not the expert on that, so I'll hand over to Simon on that. But with the reduction in oil prices that occurred, and also there was an oversupply of plastics towards the end of last year anyway, you know, the recycled plastic raw material industry cannot compete currently with the virgin plastic industry. So, you know, there's a big issue. But it always strikes me as interesting that we've had the Blue Planet effect. Everybody knows about it. We still have this. We know there's a problem. Everybody apparently is doing something about it. And yet we still continue to increase our plastic production by 5% every year.
Now, we'll come to Simon and this very tricky concept of oil prices and the value of recycled materials and things like that in a second. But first of all, Susan, can you fill us in a little bit? Has COVID-19 led to a total setback of sustainable packaging initiatives?
Well, I'm not really sure that I agree that it's been a total setback in initiatives. I believe, like the previous speaker, that I think we've seen a lot of hiccups. Hiccups simply sometimes out of necessity. If you haven't had a material, or if you really, as a brand owner, for example, need to get food on the shelf, that has been a priority. But I do really not agree that everything is completely, you know, eradicated. I really think it's a hiccup. And on the long term, we still see legislation being supportive of making a transition towards a more circular economy and making the plastic packaging that we use more sustainable, recyclable, recycled content, etc. We see the brand owners. I did analysis of about 100 companies worldwide, and I do know that there's a lot of critique. It might be greenwashing, they might not be doing enough, but honestly, I do think the brand owners are also taking a lot of initiative. I mean, even during the crisis, companies like Campbell Soup and Henkel, they have endorsed targets. You've seen Coca-Cola invest in chemical recycling. Yesterday, actually, Nestle announced that they were investing $30 million out of the 2 billion Swiss francs that they have committed to making their packaging more sustainable. They invested $30 million yesterday in the closed loop fund to actually speed up the process of getting more access to recycled feedstock, plastic feedstock. Nestle, for example, is trialing refill models. You have Aldi that is using reusable bread bags that you have to buy as a consumer. That's true. It's a cotton bag. But there are many different kind of initiatives. Coca-Cola, for example, yesterday as well, also announced that in the Netherlands, all of their PET bottles will be made of 100% rPET. So I think even though there have been some, let's say, perhaps a pause or a break, you do see that big brands, not just legislators, but big brands as well, they're really trying. This is really a strategic part of their agenda. It's not just talking. It really is, because they've communicated it to their investors, and the investors are asking for it. Investors want companies to become more sustainable. So to me, it's a hiccup, but you can see that things start accelerating again.
I think it's very interesting when it starts coming into the subject of money. Now, Simon, let's talk about the values in the whole recycling chain. So we saw a decline in the price of oil, which means that that plastics prices go down, recycled plastic prices may rise. Can you explain to us what all that means?
I wish I could. I spent my life to...
But to explain it to the lay listener, to me sitting here thinking, yeah, how does it all work?
Okay, you know, it's what I sort of spend my life talking about, really, and talking to government about. And you know, you can't just sort of put it down to one particular angle, if you like. Let's sort of break it down. You know, take it right back to the roots of everything. You know, we collect material for recycling. Let's talk about the household. So we collect material for recycling, and you know, most councils now will collect, you know, pretty much a core set of materials, albeit, you know, we need it to be even more core than it is, which is maybe something we can talk about later. But you know, we collect glass, we collect paper and cardboard, we collect plastic bottles. And most councils, pots, tubs and trays. And then we've got cans thrown in there. And maybe one or two other councils, you know, will collect other bits and pieces. So that is collected generally by now the council's waste disposal, waste management contractor. And they then have to process that material so that it is in a form that can be used elsewhere. So we've got a commodity that is recycled and it goes to make other commodities. It's a raw material, and that's the key part of it. And this is why it's so very complicated. We have to have a commodity that is marketable. And I think the way that we have designed and the way that we've collected things in the past, which is another debate that we can have, I'll say in the past that we're still collecting, doesn't make that easier. But ultimately, we have a product that has to go on to the market, must have a value to be made into other materials. And the problem we have, with particularly with plastics, is that recyclable plastic is competing against virgin plastic. Yeah. And there are, you know, many market conditions, and we're in this case at the moment where oil prices are so low, then it is far easier and far cheaper for plastic manufacturers to use oil to make virgin plastics rather than using recycled plastics. Mm-hmm. And that means that we struggle to find a market, particularly for the lower end value commodities. And we often get suckered into then having no choice but to incinerate the material with energy recovery. So what can we do? And this is the key to it. And you know, this is contained in the resources and the waste strategy. And one of the things that we can do, and government are going to do in 2023, hopefully it's not going to have a lag because of COVID, is they're going to introduce a plastics tax. So it will basically be a 30% tax on a £200 a ton tax on a material that doesn't have a minimum 30% recycled content in it. So the idea is that you're creating your own market, you're creating the demand for recyclable materials. And this tax should, the idea is switch away from the use of virgin materials. But it's not quite, I don't think, as simple as that. I think it's great, and it's not without its its nuances. But fundamentally, in the UK, you know, we don't manufacture anything nowadays, do we? You know, we're, you know, cars and, you know, other few bits and pieces. But you know, we've moved away from being a manufacturing nation. Compare, for example, to Germany, you know, who have their own manufacturing industry. So we don't have our own circular economy. And what has got to happen is that when we introduce the plastic tax, and then when we start producing, we start getting the economics in there to allow us to produce materials from recycled sources, we've got to have our own internal circular economy to use the materials that we're actually producing. And I think that is going to be, you know, that is something that's probably, to be honest, is going to take decades. So, you know, when we're talking about how this is going to work, and I think it was, you know, sort of David mentioned about the science of it all earlier, and as an umbrella term, you know, science is very, very important, you know, the fundamental economics of how the whole system works, because it's if you look at it as a, think of a wheel with a cog or a cog in your car, and it's a circular cog. If one little cog is snapped off and the wheel doesn't turn, then the circular economy doesn't work. So yeah, it's not just as simple as collecting the materials. It's not just as simple as designing it. It's not just as simple as having a plastic tax and labeling everything properly. Everything has got to work in harmony, and that's got to be fundamentally underpinned by manufacturing and circularity and changes in culture. And I could talk about this, as you probably just realised. You know, I get very passionate about it, and you know, it needs the buy-in from so many different entities to make it all work.
And presumably, there is a premium paid for recycled material because people can say on their packaging, this has been made from recycled material. Can you just tell me how much, if I wanted to buy a ton of your finest recycled PPE bottles, how much would it set me back?
At the moment, £300 or £400 a ton, probably, for the material. But you know, that's the sort of the higher value material. And again, this is where there is such a difference between the commodities. Let me give you an example, just a very good example of how this works and the problems that we have. Some others on the call might completely disagree with me here, but I'm a big fan of plastic milk bottles, okay? And I'm a big fan of plastic milk bottles because they're incredibly circular. They're designed for the purpose of carrying milk. They're very lightweight. They protect the food, protect the product. You can carry them on a vehicle, and they're absolutely and utterly circular. So when you wash them out and you put them in their recycling bin, the council's collecting them, they can easily separate them, and they're pretty valuable, you know, £300-400 a ton, no problem whatsoever, and it goes around circular again and again and again and can be used. Take it down to the other end of the scale and you look at plastic film, and we've already talked about supermarket film. You know, a lot of supermarket film is pretty much unrecyclable. Technically, it might be recyclable, but in reality, you're not going to be able to collect it. You're not going to be able to process it, and the economics don't work. And actually, that sort of material at the moment has a negative value. You know, that can be, I don't know, anything from, you know, minus 50 to a minus £100 a ton. So it is material specific. And again, this is where we come into of, you know, can we use less of the materials that are unrecyclable? And do we leave alone, you know, the circularity, for example, a milk bottle or a PET bottle? That's not to say that, you know, it doesn't have its challenges in terms of litter and collecting it, etc. But yeah, let's try and eliminate the more polluting, the more difficult, less circular materials that we have out there.
I love the specificity of this conversation already. It's getting really good. Now, David, let's think about the specificity. So, delivery services are not taking back plastic bags at the moment. They've removed that sort of level of recycling. And now, is this important and is it reasonable, do you think?
Well, this is all based on fear. And we fear what we don't know. And I think that this is a hiccup, as I said already. And I think once we know more about the contamination and the infection rates of this disease and materials that we use and handle, that will then help that. So it is very difficult, because what you've got here is people have got a decision to make between health and pollution, if you like.
There's moral relativity in some.
Yeah, and you know, lots of people say, well, we are going to pollute all this the environment with this PPE. The question is, does it actually need to be such a stark choice? And I think that there are some elements that would have to and some that don't. And what's required is a better management. We sort of jumped into this because we didn't have any time with both feet, and we, you know, and everybody just went, right, get PPE. So there was that sort of build up to put in management systems and processes, put those in place in order to manage it and protect the environment, didn't occur. I think if I can just go back on Simon's point, I actually totally agree with the milk bottle solution. I mean, HDPE, which is what your average milk bottle is or milk carton is made of, is great. And that is a great circular economy product. But the problem with those circular economy things is that you need public buy-in in order to complete that wheel. That public buy-in to is one of those cogs. And unfortunately, the packaging industry that we have, or the concept or the perception of packaging, is that it is a valueless product to the general public. So when I buy my bottle of water, I believe I'm buying the water, not the plastic bottle, when actually it's probably not quite the case. It's sort of, you know, the value. So that value perception needs to change in order to get public buy-in. And that's a difficult thing to achieve. And I'm not really, I don't have the answer to that, and I wish I did.
Okay, now, Susan, what has COVID-19 meant for plastics use within food manufacturing and retail? And especially when you kind of compare the refill stations and initiatives that it was beginning to kick off for things like that. What happens next?
Yeah, I think you've seen refill models popping up in different countries. And I think some of them are actually just continuing undisturbed. If you look at especially things that are non-food, what's the name? Body Shop, for example. They still have those kind of concepts. And as I mentioned, a company like Nestle is trialing refill models, for example, in Chile with pet food. We're seeing those trials actually pretty much everywhere. But I do think that a lot of people who were into this trying reuse models, refill models, they have been a little bit hesitant, but I'm quite sure it's picking up again. As I mentioned before, you see that brand owners are busy with, they're really trying to, well, they're making commitments to make their packaging more sustainable. And it's not just because of legislation, it's also because investors, as I mentioned, they want companies to take responsibility. And consumers are really, really on top of this topic still. I do believe, as other speakers have also said, there has been a kind of a break. You mentioned the beaches in the UK. I must say that I was also flabbergasted when I saw the pictures. But I do think that there is still a large group of consumers who really are concerned about packaging waste, not just plastics, but packaging waste in general. You see quite a lot of initiatives of during the lockdown of people trying to be living completely packaging free. I mean, at least I've seen a lot of social media examples of that. Packaging free, plastic free, collecting all the packaging that they've been using and actually, you know, learning from that and saying, is this what I really want? So I really do think that we do see that we will continue to see, let's say, demand for this kind of refill models.
Mm.
I just don't think
That's on a personal level. But what do you think that governments can do? Because I think so much of recycling, well, as Simon mentioned right at the start, has been fueled by policy. What do you think governments should be doing to support, you know, the advantages that were being made?
I think that one of the key points is really to make policies that make sense. We already mentioned science-based initiatives, but I also think governments need to make laws that also make sense. If you look at the UK plastic tax, as far as I understand, the money is earmarked to actually improve the waste management system. But if you look at the plastic tax that has just been adopted for the EU, I was very, very surprised to see that money is just literally going into a black hole. That money, I think, should be used to, you know, it should be earmarked to actually solve the problem which you're taxing, which is not the case. So I do think that when we make policies, they have to be supportive of what do you want to achieve? Do we want to achieve less plastics? Do we want to increase the recycled content rate? What do we want to achieve? And then when you make regulations, you have to focus the regulations on that purpose and not, let's say, just make up a tax that is going to be used for something completely different. Nobody knows where that money is going. It's going into the general budget. That's one thing. Another thing is waste management, which has been mentioned quite a lot. I think I saw from the BBC that in the UK, but the other speakers will know this much better, I think there were like 75 different waste management systems just in the UK. But if you multiply that by the number of countries across Europe alone, you can imagine that there's just a patchwork of how we are supposed to deal with waste. And I really, really strongly believe you have to educate consumers and you know, society to know how to deal with waste, because I'm really sure people do want to, but they don't understand. I live in Amsterdam. I have no waste separation. My parents-in-law, they have complete waste separation in another municipality. It doesn't make sense because consumers don't believe that when they do separate the waste, that it makes sense, because, you know, then their friends or family in another city do not have to do that. So I think we need some kind of a level playing field. You need good consumer education, and you need some kind of a framework from regulators that really makes sense, harmonized.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the other thing that you need is a set of economics that work. Now, Jeff, is there still money in sustainability in terms of the changes that we've seen? Do you see an acceleration? Because I think so many of these things, you know, we can talk about personal responsibility, but you have to have companies that will buy into this and make a profit from achieving it, don't you?
I hope there's money in sustainability, otherwise I'm going to be out of a job before too long.
Well, that's what I thought. How are things at home at the moment?
I mean, we can argue the proverbial about the word sustainability and what it truly means. I mean, in the question you were asking about economics and investment, I mean, we've already had the mention of low oil price, but you know, the one thing that the plastic tax and also the revisions of the extended producer responsibility regs that will come through with the new environment bill into regulation will hopefully start to create this new circular economy and put the money where it's truly needed. So EPR, as my understanding is right, is largely going to be targeted at local authorities. So whether we will see a reduction...
Can you tell us what EPR is?
It's extended producer responsibility. So it's the what they call packaging regulation. So it's a requirement on those companies putting plastics or any packaging onto the marketplace to recover that. And that's done through packaging, recycling notes and so on. So there's a whole economic system. It's been running in Europe for a number of years. It actually exists across the world, although it seems to me as though not all countries, whilst they have the legislation, and India will be one example, that this is not actually implemented. So the mechanism is there for everybody to use to make sure that packaging is actually recovered from the marketplace in a way that makes sense. And that helps Simon with his recycling a business association, I'm sure. But a couple of things to me on this is that, you know, we talk about, can't be recycled. And there's an awful lot to unpack here about what we mean by recyclable, whether it means, is it collected? Is it then able to be sorted? Can it then be reprocessed into a valuable product? And you have to unpack all those sort of elements to it. Pretty much all plastics can be recycled or reprocessed, but not necessarily using the mechanical recycling infrastructure that exists in most developed worlds. You've got to look to advanced technologies such as chemical recycling, and that was mentioned along the way as well this morning. So we need to have those.
So would you say that there is a fair amount of bogus claim to recyclability on packaging? I mean, I do unpack products that, and I think you can't recycle that, can you? Do you think that people mislabel things in order to make it seem, you know, everything is theoretically recyclable?
It's improved. I mean, the labeling on package labeling is improving to give the customer, the consumer, better understanding, and then for what bin to put something in, in their domestic life. I think we've got a long way to go, and it comes back to, you know, David mentioned science, but actually I would even go further and say design. Design is at the heart of this. If we can design better for recyclability, i.e. using materials that are of a similar polymer type, so in multi-layered packaging that they stand a better chance of finding a process, not necessarily in your locality, and I think that's the other problem here, is that the infrastructure for collection is pretty much the same, but actually what then happens downstream, where that material goes, it's a commercial product and it has to find its own reprocessor. And that's where the marketplace comes in. So, you know, going back to your economics, the big pull that's going to come if the extended producer responsibility and tax regime comes in is going to be coming from people wanting to have recycled plastic resin. So basically back to hydrocarbon, because that's the universal plastic that can go into food grade, food contact packaging. Whereas, you know, a lot of mechanical recycled products can't go back into the same product they were in before. So the chances are you might end up with an oil can going into a route, but then clearly you would not want the residues of an oil can going into food grade contact. So the recycling system needs to be regenerated by design and in a way that then makes sure the value is there. And as a passing shot, you know, unlike a lot of, and governments don't like to regulate, despite what you might think, but particularly market regulation. We have market regulation for energy and for water. We don't in this country have market regulation for waste. And if the government really wants to achieve its aims and make it economically fair, so people want to come in and invest with new technologies, there's got to be a rebalancing around the waste management companies that sit in this space, because otherwise it will be trying to tweak the system where really it's embedded in, with a culture of, you know, large waste companies, and the innovation will be squeezed out because there'll be no investment potential, no return on investment.
Simon, I'll just one more question for you. Are there simple solutions? Are there low-hanging fruit that are being missed? What makes you furious and makes you go, why don't people do this? Is there something that either governments or the public or recyclers or manufacturers are missing that you think that you sit down and think, why the hell don't people do this?
You know, there's not one thing that I would necessarily point to, and you're right. If you want to pull the plug out in 3 hours and stop me talking about this, then feel free to do so. But I'll try and summarise it very quickly. It, to me, and I'm a bit of a simpleton, and I see things very black and white, and you know, picking up on what's been said already. It starts off right at the beginning, and that's the production of the material. We have a waste hierarchy that is, you know, scientifically proven, and you know, which is reduce, so we don't produce it in the first place. If you have to produce it, can you reuse it? excuse me, if you can't reuse it, you recycle it, and then there's a recovery, you know, waste to energy, composting, etc. So fundamentally, we don't produce it in the first place. You know, do we need all this plastic that's wrapped around vegetables, etc., and you know, other alternatives, and what's the science behind it? So, you know, once you've decided that you've got to use it, can you then design it for recyclability? And we have some very, very important choices to make here. And you know, without going off on too much of a tangent, you know, is there a danger that we move away from circular plastics into something that is not recyclable? You know, a lot of supermarkets now moving away from microwavable plastic trays, which are recyclable, moving into fibre, which then become combinated with, they're not recyclable. So there's that element there as well. So, you know, and that's very, very complicated. But then, can you then label it correctly to say that it's recyclable or it's not recyclable? And then can we have proper collection systems so that the public know exactly, you know, they have a product, they've used it and on it, it says, yes, it's recyclable, put it in your blue bin. And everybody has exactly the same system. And then, of course, we just need the end market, you know, and that is a huge, huge problem in the UK. You know, we need markets for the materials. And so to answer your question, you know, is there something overall that frustrates the heck out of me that, you know, that we could do? Well, it's that package that I've just mentioned to make it easy and to change the culture of the public so that, you know, it just becomes second nature. You don't have to think about it. You don't think it's ending up in landfill. You know, very, very simple instructions. It's recyclable, wash it, put it in your blue bin. That will make our lives incredibly, incredibly easier.
Susan, anything that you think is just a simple change that ought to be made that would just help enormously?
Well, I mentioned it before, and other speakers as well, that I really, really believe in public education. You need to make people aware. If they're not aware, they're not going to change. So I think that's a very important thing. And I mentioned before, I'm a little bit pessimistic, but I don't think there's one easy low-hanging fruit. I think it's a combination. That's also why you see that big brands, big brand owners, supermarkets, plastic packaging company, other packaging materials, governments, all kind of companies along the chain are starting to cooperate, because it's just not possible as one recycling company or one plastic packaging company or one Unilever to change the whole system. I think we really need to work together, and I think that's where we would see the biggest achievements. But that's not something that is done overnight, and I don't think that's a low-hanging fruit, but it's necessary.
Jeff, do you think there's any low-hanging fruit? I'm not saying there's got to be one solution to everything, but is there a thing that everyone could do that would just help enormously?
An individual point of view, I think what Simon put out there was sensible. I guess if, you know, in the current COVID climate, which I guess is the context for our discussion, you know, we will see people's behaviour changing when they're going to supermarkets. They don't want to hang about. They're going to grab things and go. And I think it is inevitable that we'll see an increase. I think the one thing that I would look for the industry to do probably is to look more at that downstream part of the waste sorting process. So if we've had improved collections, which is also in the government's agenda, is to harmonise waste collection. And that's, you know, if you look to government of Wales, you know, they have done a fantastic job to improve their ability to recycle. And that is driven largely by direct communication with their local authorities and the customers on the ground. Actual householders have done that. So there's a good model there to follow. But for me, it's also then what happens downstream. And the higher quality processing, the better quality of bales of you know, hard to recycle plastics even to the standards that we find exist in Europe, then that commodity has a higher value and can be readily reprocessed with also fewer hands in the chain as well. I think we always hemorrhage cost the longer the chain is. So let's shorten the chain. Let's get it to advanced recycling processes. And let's also make sure that what then goes into those technologies is supported and invested. So that's not a quick answer. Let's look at where the solution lies for the unrecycled plastic.
And David, what would be your the thing that keeps you up at night, the one thing that makes you think, oh, come on, we'll just do this bit?
I think education has been alluded to already. Education and communication is key. And Susan mentioned that, you know, people want to change, and that is true. What we also have to remember, of course, is that this is a global problem, and unfortunately that solution is not a one size fits all, and changing the culture and behavior in a small island in Indonesia is going to be very, very significantly different to changing it here in the UK or somewhere in Europe. You know, you've got infrastructure, economics, and all these other issues to consider. And I think that if you're going to look at that, we need to somehow change that value perception. What is it that's going to make somebody who's a fisherman living on an island in Lakshadweep actually go and pick up that rubbish and do something with it? Well, I can tell you why he would. He would if it had some value for him or her. And you know, so that, I think, if we could change the value perception of plastic packaging in some way, and the take-back schemes that they have, you know, for bottles and things in Germany work in that way. You won't find a bottle on the floor in Germany because somebody is worth 25 cents. It's really, really simple. And if we can change that, then I think we can make a huge difference.
Fantastic. Okay. We're going to have to draw it to close because we could talk about this for days, as Simon has pointed out. So I just leaves me to say, I just hope that everything gets back on track and that the initiatives that we're beginning are implemented and that the future is bright for packaging and for the reuse of it. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and you heard from David Jones, Susan Hansen, Simon Ellen, and Jeff Brightley. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Now, you also heard from me, Stephen Gates, and if you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to apprenticeships. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.